question from the visit started today. She might be able to learn this from her family. I'm a spacious lady to the world. I'm a good family. I'm a spacious in the body. Om Guna Dhamanandasya Dhana Dhana Slaka Saksu Sumaritam Dhana Prajma Sayyada Dhanama Sri Jaitanya Madhishtha Sakitin Dhana Dhitla Sahami Kakala Mahanda Saksu Sakhanda Dhana Sipopta Chivrishtha Chivrishnaya Dhaya Vishya Dhita Nam Prajma Dhaya Vishya Dhana Dhana
Krishna held up Govinda Hill, and after he placed it down, and after the cowherd men wondered about the identity of Krishna, and after they concluded that let them take shelter, always be under the protection of wonderful Krishna, then Indra came, Nisarabi Devi. And Indra offered prayers. Indra was very shy. He offered prayers, quite wonderful prayers, begging Krishna's forgiveness. He says, "You are competent to chastise offenders of eternal time. Within this material world, there are many fools like me who consider themselves to be the Supreme Lord. Or all in all within the universe. So everyone who possesses a false ego is a fool, because that means all conditioned fools. Why? Because due to the nature of false ego, we consider ourselves the central figure in existence. This is the basic consciousness that is gifted to a living entity by false ego. We may not think ourselves all in all within the universe, but within our own little private universe of our consciousness, we do think of ourselves as all in all. So Indradev says, eternal time, as Krishna's energy, will chastise all living entities. You are so merciful that without accepting their offenses, you devise means so that their false prestige is subdued and that they can know you and no one else or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's Krishna's mercy. If he gives a living entity that realization, that is simply Krishna's mercy. And it is not by suffering alone that a living entity, a soul, will realize this, because suffering cannot cause bhakti, but only bhakti can cause bhakti. Indra continues. Suffering causes cynicism, but with bhakti there, then suffering can have some meaning and one can understand the actual purpose. For what is the purpose of suffering?
Purification.
Couldn't Krishna have thought of another way? That question is actually asked by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in his explanations. Couldn't he have thought of another way? And the answer is, be quiet. Who do you think you are? That's the arrogance of a conditioned soul. He thinks, couldn't have Krishna done? I have a better idea than the way Krishna is doing things. Yeah, it's purification. Suffering can give us purification. What other purposes? Why is suffering there?
To be going against the current of the material, but you know, you're going against the laws of nature.
Right, but who set up the laws of material nature?
It educates.
Well, how does it educate? Because there's so many people suffering, and it's they don't seem to be getting very well educated.
Well, then you violate the laws of material nature, and then you have to do a reaction.
Does that mean you don't know that there's a violation of the laws?
Yeah, ignorance.
You want to
What's the essential point about suffering? Why do we suffer?
It's an experience contrary to our desire to enjoy.
Yeah, it's
independent of Krishna.
Okay, but what's the essential point? If you trace it back, what's the essential point, huh? Forgetfulness of Krishna, but even more essential than that. Huh? We had something close to that. We have our natural constitutional position. Who we actually are, unavoidably, and there's nothing we can do about it. You know, we're Krishna's part and parcel, and we have a natural relationship with him. Our sarup, livera sarupoi, Krishna nityadas. So when we go against our natural position, that means, and then all the points that everyone mentioned come in, that's ignorance. So ignorance is the cause, we say, again, and therefore the cure for ignorance is knowledge, obviously. The cure for darkness is light. So what is the darkness that has to be removed? The ignorance of we are constitutionally, by our very nature, Krishna's servant. And the soul rebels against that. Not all souls, but those souls who do rebel against that, for one reason or another, they're placed with a false sense of who they are, and that's called the hankar. And that's we can say that ahankar is the first the basis of all material existence. And the third canto of the Bhagavatam describes ahankar combining with three modes of material nature and producing the rest of material existence. Material existence is based on ahankar, and one level beneath that, it's based on Krishna's giving souls who don't want to be with him a position, a situation in which they can avoid their unnatural position. And that's called the material world. And in the material world, there are certain laws. So one could ask, I mean, Krishna, he's making a situation for the living entities that if you have to love me, and if you don't love me, you're going to suffer. So how can that situation cause someone to love Krishna? Follow what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, like if you say, if you don't love me, I'm going to stick pins in you. So I love you, 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 I love you. But you really don't. You just don't want to get the pin stuck in you. Or you say, I don't care. Anyone who'd make a situation like this, that if you don't love me, I'm going to stick pins in you. I don't want to have anything to do with you. And that's basically the... Or there's other ways that people deal with it. They see that this person is also powerful. The situation is very difficult, so they take shelter of. They figure out that he's the controller of the whole thing. So they present their desires to him. Please take out this pin. Please, instead of putting a pin in there, please put a flower there. Please do this. Please do that. Please do that. Please do that. But what Krishna wants is neither the person who's approaching him with pins in himself to remove the pins or to get some other, remove the pain, get pleasure, or to just remove the pins or to be inimical. He doesn't want those three positions. They're the positions of the materialist, the atheist, Gnostic, is the one who's completely consciously turned his back on Krishna, and the karmi is the one who's approaching Krishna for some benefit, selfish benefit, and then the jnani is approaching Krishna for liberation. But Krishna actually doesn't want any of those, what he wants. So is it possible, how is it possible to to be in it. And then there's some people, and there's a whole science, not a science, a philosophical question that Western theology never seems to get beyond, and somehow or other in India and in other countries that are more, the false egos are wired differently, then this question isn't as essential for them, but they can't reconcile in Western theology how there could be an all good God who is all powerful, and still there can be so much suffering in this world. Somehow or another, in a place like India, they take the suffering as part of life, part of material existence. But in the West, they think that life is inherently meant for our pleasure, and then anything that gets in the way of that, of our unequivocal right to enjoy our existence, is artificial. So how could God be the God of artificial, while a place like India, and even in third world countries, and even in China, that they have a completely different viewpoint on reality. They take suffering as part of existence. Part of material life means suffering. It's not that you can extract the suffering and have just refined happiness in the material world. That's what the Western dream is, isn't it? They just want to remove the suffering, but you can't, because material life is the heads and material suffering is the tails, and you can't take you can't take half the coin, because that's the very nature of the material world. So the question is, how does Krishna get us? How can we go above these three tendencies? One, the atheistical tendency of how can there be such a good God who makes everyone suffer, or the seeing that God is there for the purpose of to satisfy me, or the desire for liberation. But since our real position, constitutional position, is love of Krishna, how can we develop that in the face of all the suffering in this material world? That's the question that I wanted to phrase. And the answer is?
Develop attraction with Krishna.
Yeah. But how do you deal with the suffering? That's the question.
It seems like you have to have proper knowledge too. Like a proper conception of God and His world and time.
But how do you deal with the suffering? At least theoretically.
To attend and come home.
Yeah. This is what Lord Brahma, who's the chief of it all in this universe, what his recommendation is, Tateno Kampam Susamakshamano Boonja Nevatmak Vipava Bhatkam Nidvagvaru Kolanda Dhamma Namaste Jibhitayo Mukti Padesa Dayabhak. Because the false ego looks at suffering as something that's not deserved, and that's where the rebellion comes from. I deserve only happiness. And therefore it becomes very upset when the happiness is mixed with suffering, or the suffering is completely dominating our existence, which must happen at different points in our life, where the suffering becomes completely dominant, when it's time to get really ill, or it's time to get really old. Life tends to be dominated by continuous suffering on many, many different levels. On the simplest level, one's freedom is completely restricted. And the second level is the physical and the mental level of the different sufferings. Of course, freedom being restricted causes mental suffering, and physical suffering causes physical suffering, which are byproducts of having a material body. It necessarily must be there. So the tendency is to think this is undeserved and become very inimical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This really pokes at the false ego. when there's suffering. It pokes at the false ego. And unless one is very deep in one's surrender, that's what it takes. Surrender to what? Surrender to who I am as the part and parcel of Krishna. I'm Krishna's. And whatever he does with me is for my benefit. And I deserve so much worse. I'm completely surrendered. Unless one is completely deep in that realization, then one will rebel. So this is the basic key. That verse is the basic key to deal with suffering. Easy to read, easy to say, difficult to do. With it, because it's, you can philosophically know it, it's not a matter of knowledge. But then when it happens, the subtle body, which is based on this false ego and mind, it rebels, and it either goes for liberation or it goes to remove it.
Where it's difficult, though, I find that some of these are conditions of suffering, and you think, well, even your enemies wouldn't do this to me.
Yeah. Well, how's this a way to treat your kid?
if somebody gets very sick or something, even their enemy will feel sorry for them or help them out. But how is...
So
what's allowing this to happen?
So how is Krishna allowing that?
Even somebody who's really down, really sick or something, then people don't really like them or help them.
The heart softens.
So
the question is: is Krishna? Does he run out of compassion? Well, this is very interesting. I mean, this is a deep question. Yes. Yeah, So you're talking from the position of having been in the halo too. So could you explain your thought?
Well, through that experience, Krishna, out of his compassion, he's taken you to a place where you won't otherwise go. And
place in what sense of place? What kind of a place?
In yourself.
In
your self-awareness, in your consciousness.
Yeah. And what are you aware of in that place?
It's very humbling.
It's humbling. What else?
Yeah. It's very revealing.
Okay, it can be humbling. Yeah. So you're pain and you go to a place that you're not used to. So in that sense, you could be very humble. Or you could become very rebellious and angry too.
You do.
You mean alternating between one and the other?
Definitely.
When you watch how?
How you respond to it so differently than what you would say you would respond to it. When you see the disparity between what you sort of think you're going to do and what you do.
And then what else comes?
A recognition of insignificance and your position of dependence.
So, but there's one other point. I think that's required to put in there, and that is that Krishna is there with you.
Yeah.
He stays with you.
Yeah, definitely.
So if he stays with you despite your different fluctuations of consciousness, and he's ready to be with you despite your not always ready to be with him.
Mm.
That's the part that awakens in you the fact when you understand that there's love coming from his side that's not dependent exactly on the consistency of your consciousness.
Mm.
Then appreciation and then love develops in you or comes to you, comes to more realization. Here's someone I could actually depend on. And that he's there. He's actually there.
Yeah, it's also not, his specification is not dependent on your physical condition either.
Physical, mental?
Yeah.
How about spiritual?
Yeah, no, he's always there for you. With you.
He also provides power.
He sure certainly does.
You know, in so many ways you see him through the...
Right. But some people get tested so heavily that in circumstances he doesn't provide the people even.
And he must be providing it something else.
Sometimes, Harishya Tadanam Sanai, he takes away everything else but him, and that, and him directly. The one thing he comes in the form of is the Holy Name. He comes in the form of the Holy Name. A very merciful manifestation, because all you need to do is either vibrate the Holy Name with your tongue, or even keep it going in your mind, and he can be present in that way and give shelter to you. But he comes also in the form of the devotees and their compassion. Thanks, Sava.
Long way to go.
And then you asked the question again, and you said, is that a way to treat? See, then it's pointing it again to him, that it's all, that it's his fault, right? If you take that. But it's we who have gone against our constitutional nature as a servant. And that's the crux of the matter that seems, that's the crux of the matter. That if we don't accept that, then we're going to turn on him.
And most people don't.
Well, that's why most people turn on him.
Yeah. But that's where the knowledge comes in, isn't it?
Or your faith in an insufficient concept,
yeah,
can't be sufficient. So the tate and okampam was tate and okampam susamichamano mūjana evatma kripavapakam. So this is describing the consciousness of someone who is legitimately eligible for liberation, to go back home, back to Godhead. Tate anukampam, who therefore tat te anukampam, your compassion, susamikshanan, hoping for your compassion, for your mercy. Tate anukampam, susamikshamano, earnestly hoping for your compassion, while bhunjana evatma krita vipakam, earnestly, sincerely undergoing the sufferings itself caused by my own karma.
Inherent in that kind of that feeling that God is so cruel, automatically inherent is that I didn't do anything.
Right. That's what I said.
And if you don't know there's another birth, you might have kind of feel that it's a good life, and so called good life, and you just can't understand why all these things could happen to a person who...
Just a nice person. But that's also it's the those kind of people who also don't have the knowledge of what good and what sinful is, because there's no consciousness of the differentiation between the person and the body, and so it's sort of fuzzy and vague too. So one can be causing all kind of cruelty to animals, for example, and eating them. That's because you like the taste of their bodies, and so you eat them. So you think, why not? Because, like Murgari the hunter, when asked, why do you do this? I have to kill him. And what was Murgari's answer?
His father trained him.
My father, this is what my father did. So that's completely what goes on. You know, but that's not an excuse, because your father did it and you're doing it. It's not an excuse that holds up in court, so to speak.
Yeah, there's one other thing I was on this point, is that in anything, good and bad kind of exist simultaneously. Like, nothing is 100% good or 100% bad.
In the material world.
If you say getting very sick is you could say it's bad, but then one side of it might be people are more nice to you than what they normally be, or you get taken care of, or you don't have to do some work you don't like doing. It's kind of always a mix.
Is there anything that's all bad?
Well, I got, you know, the absolute platform, I'm forgetting Krishna.
No, I'm talking about, you were talking on the material platform.
Material platform, well, yeah, but usually you can find in the bad, there's usually a good side to it.
How about a butcher? Is there a butcher? Is there anything good in it?
Or a rapist.
Being a butcher.
I mean, something really, really tamaguni.
Yeah.
I think up to real, real, it probably is true, the modes are mixed. But when it comes to real tamaguni activities,
yeah, whether he's getting any good from that experience of being a
just like
butcher.
Sometimes they, when in that, when that whole Serbia, Bosnia, what's the name of that other country that broke away that was more Muslim?
Croatia.
No, not Croatia, but it was a part of Serbia. It was
Chechnya.
Kosovo.
Yeah.
So there was one point, because the Serbians were well armed, they just took people out of their villages, and old men, ladies, and kids, and they just had them dig their holes, you know, the graves, and just. Fertilizer. I guess you could say there's a good in it, but it's probably hard to look at it like that. I mean, the real tamaguni stuff is just the result of tamaguni is all bad.
Well,
that's what it would seem.
Anyway, to say there was good in it was if something so wretched is happening, it would be better not to go through further suffering or something. Where it's enormously bad, but there's something.
Well, that's the question, is there something? That was what...
Yeah, that was the question.
If you had to be there might be something in...
Well, I was referring more to the things that happen to you on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
Somebody's rude to you, or you lose some money. Or getting a car accident. Or on balance, you can say they're bad things, but there may be... You can also say...
There's a silver lining.
There's a silver lining there. Also.
But people do lose a lot of their faith when
they
come to these
gory
things.
Well, the tamaguni things. Because why? Because they say that, how could God let this happen?
Yeah.
Suddenly he's the main player in it.
Yeah, it's all his fault.
Because he's the supreme
controller. People were saying that about the volcano in Europe.
And the tsunami in Indonesia when 250,000 people killed.
But it inconvenienced them in their holiday plan.
How could God inconvenience me in my holiday plan? Who do you think it is anyway?
That's your worst problem.
I mean, get a class action suit going against them.
And I didn't get rid only of if they, my whatever.
Only if they had his email address, then he'd... I mean, it's heavy. The false ego is... And it's based on this, based on lack of acceptance that we're his, that we're his servants.
Right.
Okay. That's the essence of false ego.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as we make the choice to not be his servants, then we're immediately necessarily placed in a situation that's false. Because we are his servants, so you need a false, so that's the material world, the situation that's false.
Actually, a false pathway is making a false ID.
Well, yeah, you have a false ID, and you go to a, with a false ID and a false passport, you can only go into a false land.
Mm-hmm.
So this is it. It's a land where you dream, because if you're not a servant, you're thinking, one thinks of himself as, Indra was saying, as the all in all within the unit, within his universe, and then he, but he can't be all in all within the universe, then he has to play by the law, because he's going against the law of nature then, he's going against reality, so he's liable. So then one could ask the question though, is that couldn't he have set it up in a different way? That we could turn our back on him and still be happy.
Yeah.
Right?
But then the answer to that is that if you are something, you have a constitutional nature, and if you do something contrary to your constitutional nature, you can't do something different than your constitutional nature. So therefore there has to be an illusory potency that comes in and creates this. Because you can't be the other
one
that you are.
Yeah. But on a lower level, though, on a slightly lower, he does do that, though. Not on the ultimate level, no, you have to have it. But he gives you a way that you can more or less be happy in the material world, and that's called the mode of goodness.
Yeah, that's it too.
Karma Kanda.
Yeah, right. Karma Kanda, and this. Yeah, just even just
suffering if you follow like
this. Yeah, if you're here, and so if someone says, I don't want to be your servant, but I still want to be happy, well then Krishna so kind says, okay, here's the rule book, if you want to do that. But then if someone says, I don't want to be your servant, and I want to be happy, but I don't even want to follow the rules to be happy, then you're turning their back on the person who's, even to that degree, who's actually the controller, then what to do? He says, okay, then try your best. Do it yourself then.
Okay, there's a computer game.
you can do well, that's
virtual reality.
Well, that's what everyone's living in a virtual reality. And what that virtual reality is a polite way of saying illusion.
Mm.
What's the difference between a virtual, what does virtual mean? It exists only on the screen or something. Or in this, what does virtual mean? Literally?
Imaginary.
Yeah, so imaginary reality.
Almost, but not quite.
Yeah, so that's what, that means illusion, right? Do you have your dictionary handy, Linda? Find out what the literal meaning of virtual is.
It's illusion within the illusion.
Yeah. It's a reality within illusion.
It's an illusion within the illusion.
Yeah.
It's deeper illusion.
Deeper and deeper illusion.
Deeper illusion. You're in illusion thinking of the body and anything.
And everything makes sense if you accept the principles of the illusion that that the illusion gives you, then it adds up, but the principles of the illusion are false.
Also, everything makes sense within your illusion.
That's what I'm saying.
Somebody else's illusion.
Well, that's why there's a collide.
Yeah. That's your illusion, and then
there'll
be suffering.
And then a movie may work in the same way.
Huh?
In a movie, it may work the same way. You start to identify with the character, and you feel his hopes and fears.
Yeah, that's the theory of Russell.
And his joys and his hopes. But it's That's how Moody works. They try to get you to identify.
It's a formula.
Yeah.
That's how the theory of rasa works. That's rasa shastra, same principle.
That's fine for
huh?
Can you explain further?
Yeah. The rasa shastra meaning. Well, first let's find out what virtual means, if it's ready for it.
Almost or nearly as described, but not completely or according to strict definition, such as the virtual absence of border control.
Almost reality.
Mm.
So it's almost reality. This money is almost real. But monopoly money, it's almost real.
That's their term, virtual reality. We don't use that term.
And when in a computing sense, not physically existing as such, but made by software to appear to do so.
Appear to exist. So it's something that appears to exist, but doesn't actually exist.
It can be virtually the same, but there's a huge difference between the two. Like if I had a first class color photocopy of a $50 note, it's virtually a $50 note, isn't it?
Not if you're trying to buy something for me.
It's not, but virtually it is.
And then
there's
meanings related to
optics
and also physics, but go on.
Appearing as real, but not.
Yeah.
Sounds like first Bhagavatam. Illusory representation. So.
Maya. That's the definition of Maya.
So if you immediately rejected Sharma's $50 note, that was virtually the same.
That was my point.
But how come people are like mad over virtual?
Yeah.
They don't reject it, they want more and more of it.
That's a mistake.
Why?
But even the word maybe.
Why do I become mad over virtual reality?
Because experientially it feels real.
Because once you are in it, you experience it as real.
For sure.
And then once you're in it, there's a certain, you get involved in the game, and you forget that there's another world out there, and you can spend days and days and nights just playing these games and forget another world exists. And then when someone tries to tap you on the shoulder and tell you you haven't eaten, you haven't slept, you know, it's time to go to work or something like that, the last thing you want to do is withdraw from that world and have to face the fact that you've just ignored reality for the last week. But eventually you have to. You have to pull out eventually, because reality has its way of imposing itself on you.
When we were coming on the plane, there was this movie that was playing. I didn't hear it, but I was watching it, and it was about this moment in 1990s or something of Nelson Mandela.
Oh yeah, that was wonderful.
He could unify South Africa by sports, by winning the world.
They won, right?
They won, I think. And it's this whole movie about this, that for ages and ages they're all in these soccer tackles and doing this and that.
Rugby,
whatever. And then they're all cheering and cheering and cheering, but there was no kind of sobriety to know that that was only a moment, you know, and the problems of life the next day, the food, and the different struggles of life would have to continue. But that was, so their whole glorification was of this sport. And unify all the problems that years and years and years of problems can be all resolved at this little point here.
But the principle of looking for the right thing to unify a country is a good principle, but it was a bad choice perhaps, because the next year they lost. Or a few years later.
I didn't know that, but I did.
Obviously they don't win every year.
It was a very small, you know, part of the unification. You know, I just understand that, yes, we can stimulate some benefits.
But, well, no, that's not what I said. I said the principle that a country needs something, a pride,
yes.
and a unit to to unify on is required. But the particular choice that was made wasn't the wisest of choices for the reason. So what we say is that everyone should be unified in the Sankirtan of the Holy Name, for example. That's the unifying principle. That's Mahaprabhu's gift. And it's simple because it's simple in the sense that everyone, it's non gender specific, it's non age specific, it's non physical,
wealth specific.
Wealth or intelligence even.
Sane or insane specific.
Yeah, sane or yeah, even a dog can participate.
That's why in Kali Yuga that has to be the main thing, even in a sense of Bible beyond knowledge, because it's so universal.
It's so universal. Especially Kirtan. Kirtan of the Holy Name. Well, we didn't get up to the part we were supposed to get up to, but it was interesting. So how does one get the strength and attachment and attraction to Krishna that makes one's relationship with Krishna and spiritual life more relevant and more real than material existence? That's the real challenge. Isn't it? But for an exalted personality, that's what they have. Mm. They're living in more in that, and this is what, like the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita describes. They don't have the identification with the body is broken. That's also described when Bhagavatam at the beginning, Chindate, the actual identification of the soul with the body is broken. He remains, becomes effulgent in his knowledge of his relationship with Krishna. The process that's described in the second chapter, first canto.
You explain about Rasa Shastra?
Well, just Natak Shastra, you could say. That means the drama theory. And Rupa Goswami wrote on that, and also Goswami wrote Nataka Sandhika. And then also based on, I can't remember the name of it, Sahitya Dharpana. It's laid out. You have to make an identification.
So people watching the drama are meant to identify with.
You have to find a hero.
Find a hero, yeah.
Yeah, so that's why they have all these things with the teenage heroes, to appeal for teenagers, so that the young girls or whatever, the heroes, so that the young girls of the audience that will identify with the hero, and then as exactly as you said, you experience what they experience, their anguish, because of the identification. If the identification isn't forged, in other words, you have to lose your ego, your sense of self, and superimpose who you are on that character. So that's also the basic theory of drama, not that sastra, but it's also the basic theory of that Bhakti Samhita Sindha, Nectar of Devotion, that you have to find a resident of Vrindavan who's serving Krishna at an appropriate stage, who you fully identify with, and then you have, and then you experience what they experience. That's the process of Radmarg.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're, it says that directly. Where it says that one should accept a resident of Vrindavan. That's, of course, that's an advanced stage. You can't do that prematurely, but that's the process. And then you become a, actually become a servant of that personage.
And so you learn to experience it there.
Yeah, in relationship with Krishna. So that's specifically a Ragatmika Bhakta, and following in the footsteps of a Ragatmika Bhakta is called Raganuga Bhakti.
And you don't try to become them, right?
Yeah.
Like you don't try to become either servant or...
Right, but it's done through being a servant. But they're the they become the Vishaya. The Vishaya. And the, excuse me, the... not the Vishaya. Krishna's the Vishaya. But the Ashraya of the sentiment.
So the people serving Mother Yasoda, they feel the same maternal...
That's also described in the Bhagavatam, that because of Mother Yasoda's association, Vishwanath describes this, I can't remember what chapter, one of the earlier chapters, maybe 8, all the other ladies developed an intensity of mood because of her association. And also in the Rasa Lila section, it describes that when Krishna disappeared, what Krishna wanted when he disappeared, and then Srimati Radharani was with him, and then Krishna disappeared from her too. The depth of her separation affected all the other gopis and made a oneness in the group because she was so deep. By one person's death affected everyone. And that was even on the Nitya platform.
But they all loved her enough to relate to her separation, which was so much deeper.
They all loved her so much, and it was right there. The experience was right in front of them. It was very powerful. It's like a whirlpool. It's pulled down into it. But I think we shouldn't go late tonight, so we can continue tomorrow, where we'll see whether we get led by the pastime. We just read a little of Indra's prayer, and we branched off.
It was good.
Yeah, interesting.
That doesn't change something.
Yeah, it's something that I think about a lot. There's a Western term for it, for the question of suffering. It's called theodicy. Theodicy. I met a devotee where this is the great question of his life.
Without reincarnation, they're always going to have a lot of problem with us.
But even with reincarnation, it's still hard to figure out. You know why? You know, when it comes to suffering, you know, it's hard to handle.
Well, do you understand, if you had hundreds of lives, you may have made some hundreds of serious blunders in that time. In this life, we may accept I've made some.
Right.
Some
you understand it.
Choices.
You understand it, but how deep your understanding is tested when it's confronted with actual suffering. And that's what Lord Ramana was saying, that you find out that when you're confronted with it, you're suffering. Your realization doesn't match your theology, and that's very humbling. And then if you find Krishna still with you despite your lack, that gives birth to a depth of relationship with an appreciation and then love, because you see that there's love coming from him to you, that he doesn't neglect you despite the feebleness of your realization. Follow me?
Isn't it?
Huh?
It's quite powerful.
Indeed.
And it also leaves you sometimes with a kind of a remembrance that actually, hang on here, everything's all right again now, and I'm so unhappy again, and, you know, I'm feeling good about myself, and that I really understand everything, but it, at a moment's notice that could happen again, and so I better not get too proud and be a little careful.
Or you get, yeah.
If you take it normally. Because you remember how you just didn't pass that test, or you didn't pass
that. Yeah, you get ultimate, no, that's, and humility is not different from prema. So we have to become, so that by life as a devotee, we deepen in our humility. And that, it's ironic that deepening in one's humility deepens one in one's realization.
It is, because your humility is coming from realizing I don't have any realization.
That's the irony. Okay. Didn't I heard a car come up.
I think it was actually into the door.
Right, yeah. Like
where did you get a car?
I got a lift one. Yeah, it came from out of the road.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
Krishna took care of us. And he's suffering.
And he got his, he got an appointment on the spot.
Well, they went to the after hours GP clinic.
Where? Oh.
Thank you.